Hey, you guys. Time once again for the Flickers of Fear movie review show. So the movie we're talking about today is a 2020 film called My Heart Can't Beat Unless You Tell It To. Now this movie was actually supposed to come out, I think it was supposed to premiere actually at the Tribeca Film Festival. But obviously, because that was, I think it was April 2020, and that got canceled. So what ended up happening with the movie was that Dark Sky Films ended up picking it up, and then in the autumn of 2020, released it. I don't know if they did. They might have done like a limited theatrical release, but probably not since it was fall of 2020. And it actually turned up on a bunch of different streaming services. Shudder has it as of this recording. Amazon Prime has it for free as of this recording. I believe Tubi has it as well. So it's very, very easy to see. So this movie is the premiere, or the feature-length debut, rather, of a director named Jonathan Quartus. Now, I don't really remember why in particular this movie kind of like caught my eye or caught my interest. I think it was because like when I was scrolling through the newer movies, I think it was on Shudder, that I don't know, I just really liked the title of it. It sounded like a really cool title. And also it seemed to have like pretty high reviews, like 4 and 5 skulls. I didn't really read a lot of the reviews, but you can see like the little skull rating or whatever. And it seemed to have a lot of really good ratings. So I went into this, watching it the other day, literally knowing nothing about it. I did, all I knew was the title and the fact that it got decent reviews. I didn't even read a synopsis or anything like that. Now I will say that I think it's actually better going into the movie not knowing anything about it. But obviously I'm not going to be able to discuss it with you guys if that was the case. So I'm not going to spoil the end or anything like that, but you do kind of have to, you know, discuss this movie in any way, shape or form. You will have to like say what kind of movie it is and do like maybe some kind of like mild spoilers, I guess. I don't even know if I'd call it spoilers, but because I've seen some other, I haven't seen the trailer for this, so I don't know if the trailer like spoils what kind of movie it is. But I know that some of the reviews I saw did, in the sense that they're saying like what subgenre it is. Let me say it that way. But I will say that if you want to watch this film, it's just one thing. Okay, it's kind of a slow burn. It's like a family drama, but it is, I don't know if I'd call it supernatural, but I don't know. But if you like kind of slow burn family dramas that also have like some horror elements to it, then you would probably like this. Otherwise, it's not like action packed. It's not really a monster movie or anything like that. But like I said, it's better going into it not knowing anything about it. So from the very, very first scene of this film, you're kind of like sucked in. And like I said, I didn't know anything about this, so I just went into it completely blind. And I was just kind of like, huh, what do we got going on here type of thing. So the opening scene is like there's a homeless man and he's got his shopping cart there and stuff like that. And he's kind of like rummaging through the dumpster, like looking for food or looking for some stuff he can sell or whatever. And then this pickup truck like pulls up in the alley next to him. So the driver of this pickup truck, whose name we later discover is Dwight, he actually offers the homeless man like some food, like he gets him a burger, and you're led to believe that he tells him, he's like, hey, I'll give you a ride to this shelter that I know about and you can get some sleep for the night or whatever. You know, the homeless man is obviously very wary, saying like, hey, I'm not going to suck your dick or anything like that. But Dwight's like, no, that isn't what this is. Now, you know that it's probably something like nefarious. You're just not entirely sure what's going on. So they get to this kind of remote, I don't know if it's remote, but it's like a kind of a suburban looking, kind of a little bit shabby looking suburban house. And the homeless man, very, you know, basically just says, this doesn't look like a shelter, you know, as you would. And he's like, it looks like a house. And he's like, yeah, it used to be, says Dwight. So then the homeless man gets out, like, to go into the house. And Dwight comes up behind him and clobbers him on the head with a baseball bat. At which point, he takes he drags the homeless man inside. And then you see that Dwight, and then there's this other woman in the house, this very, very thin woman with long hair. Dwight kind of like maneuvers the dude's like limp body onto the table, like in the kitchen. And the woman like cuts his throat and drains all of his blood out. So as I said, this is just like the opening scene of the movie. And I'm like, all right, you got my attention. And as I said, I had no idea what was going on. Now, this is where the mild spoiler kind of shit gets into the thing, because I didn't know this going in, but I think it's better that you don't. But if you still want to, like, listen to it, then that's up to you. So what we subsequently learn is that Dwight and this other woman, who is actually his sister, Jessie, they have this thing going where they, every few days, I guess, they go out and they pick up somebody, usually like a homeless person or a sex worker or a drifter of some kind, you know, just kind of society's cast-offs, if you want to put it that way. So they go and kidnap one of those kind of people, and then they bring them back to the house and kill them and drain all their blood, and they feed this blood to their very gentle and childlike younger brother, Thomas. So, as you may have surmised, My Heart Can't Beat unless you tell it to, is essentially a vampire movie. Although they never say the word vampire, this is kind of like, and it, as I said, it doesn't really have a lot of supernatural elements to it, although Thomas does seem to have, you know, he seems to survive solely on blood. If he goes out in the sun, like, he burns, stuff like that. So, but it's very, very grounded in reality. So this is much more a vampire movie, more like in the vein of Let the Right One In or Martin, the George Romero movie, something like that. So it's not really like a classical vampire movie, or maybe like The Addiction, that movie from the, when was that? The 90s that Lily Taylor was in, where it's just kind of like, I don't want to say it's using vampirism as a metaphor, because Thomas is actually, does seem to be a vampire, just not kind of like supernatural, but he does have some like vampiric traits. But it's kind of using Thomas's vampirism in a way of like, this is, it's almost like a metaphor for exploring, dealing with somebody, like caring for somebody that has essentially a terminal illness, and the sacrifices that you make along the way, like, to keep that person alive. So that's kind of, like, what the underlying thing of this movie actually is. Like, all of the sacrifices that, you know, the loved ones of these patients, like, do on their loved ones' behalf. So the movie doesn't actually specify how long Thomas has been this way. You're led to believe, just from a lot of context clues, I guess. I don't think it's been his whole life. I don't think he was born like that or anything like that. They don't, as I said, they don't call him a vampire. They just say he's sick and that he has a disease, and that's like the only way that they can cure it. They also don't, the movie also doesn't specify what happened to the siblings' parents. You know, you could... Maybe I kind of like pictured that maybe the parents had fed themselves to Thomas or something like that at some point in the past, but this is not referred to. Now, Jessie, she actually also works as a waitress, like at a diner in this little bitty town. I think this was shot in Salt Lake City, by the way, in Utah. So she works as a waitress, kind of to make ends meet. And she seems like she's kind of, I don't want to say she runs the household with like an iron fist or anything, but she's kind of like the boss. I mean, she's the one that sort of like, reinforces like all the rules. So she homeschools Thomas. Now Thomas, they don't really tell you how old he is. He appears to be maybe 17, 18, maybe even his early 20s. But the way he acts is a lot more childlike. So that's what I mean. So you're led to believe that Thomas has been sheltered for a very, very long time. So I don't think the implication is that he was born a vampire, or maybe he was. Maybe he was born with this disease. I'm not really sure that, you know, is akin to vampirism. It doesn't really matter. But he is very, very sheltered and very childlike. So, you know, he must have been closed in for a really long time. So Jessie never lets him go outside. It appears that the siblings, the older siblings, kind of keep a schedule where they're kind of up all night with him, sort of, because he can't go out in the daytime. Because you're let, for a little while when I was watching it, I was kind of thinking, well, is he really like a vampire? Could he actually go outside in the daytime and he'd be fine? But there is one point where he actually kind of like opens the door and like puts his arm outside, and his arm like blisters and burns. So it does appear that that he can't go outside in the daytime. Now, he can go outside at night, apparently, because he does kind of do that. But Jessie, I guess because she's just, like, afraid of what will happen to him, doesn't even really like him to go outside at all. Although, you know, his brother Dwight will take him outside at night sometimes and just kind of let him stand in the yard or whatever, just so he's not like cooped up in this sort of depressing house all the time. Now, so Jessie, like I said, she's the one that kind of enforces the rules. Dwight is kind of the guy that has to go out and collect the victims. And so he does that, like, and he's really having a hard time with it. So I guess he's been doing it for a while and it's just really starting to wear on him. And they kind of show him, you know, picking up the people, and then, like, after they get killed, you know, he buries them, and then they, you know, take their clothes, like, he washes all their clothes very meticulously, folds them, and then takes them and sells them, like, at thrift stores and stuff. So that's kind of like the routine that they've had going. But as I said, you can tell that Dwight is really getting to a point where he just can't live with himself anymore. He can't do this anymore because he's very isolated as well. It seems that his only kind of like outlet is he goes and visits this sex worker named Pam who lives in this motel. And even though, I mean, obviously she's a sex worker, but he sort of has a little bit of a rapport with her. He'll pay her extra sometimes, like to stay longer, and so he can talk to her because he doesn't really have anybody else to talk to, like on the outside. And he does have sort of like fantasies or kind of, you know, idle fantasies of maybe we'll run away together, like me and her. We'll go to Miami and we'll go to the beach, and they kind of like talk about that. So, as I mentioned, this movie is actually kind of a slow burn, like family drama, more than an outright horror film. But the whole vibe of it is still like pretty bleak and like pretty grim. Because you know that while you're watching it, this situation that this family is in is not sustainable, obviously. You know, it's just kind of like a point where they kind of make mention a couple of times, even though Dwight and Jesse are essentially putting their own lives on the line to keep Thomas alive, but they say, you know, he might die anyway. This is apparently whatever this disease is, this vampirism disease, is terminal. So they're just trying to keep him alive and keep him entertained for as long as they can, but obviously they have to kill people to do it, so at some point they might end up getting caught. So obviously there's that whole situation. But all of them kind of feel trapped, I guess, like by their familial duty. So they're all kind of like trapped in this situation. But the thing about it is that even though Dwight is finding it harder and harder to actually like kill people to keep Thomas alive, at the same time, he can't really imagine like letting his brother die either, because Thomas isn't a monster. He's actually, as I said, he's a little bit older, like an older teenager and stuff, but he's actually very childlike. He's very gentle. He's very sweet-natured. And it's not, you know, you're led to believe that it's not his fault that he ended up this way, you know, and he doesn't like jump on people and, you know, and eat them or anything like that. It's just kind of like he stays in the house, he does what he's told. So there's that situation too. So Dwight's just sitting there. He can't really square, you know, I have to go out and kill these people with, you know, but I also, and I don't want to do that, but I also don't want to let Thomas die either because he's my brother and I love him. Now, Jesse has kind of like a little bit of a different thing going on because I kind of feel like after a while, like Dwight kind of starts fucking up and he's just like, look, I can't do this anymore. And like some people escape and shit like that. So Jesse decides, well, I'm gonna have to do this shit myself. She seems a lot more cold-blooded, not maybe not cold-blooded, but like practical. But you can tell that she only does that because, I mean, for the same sense of duty, because Thomas is her brother and she is, it's her responsibility to keep him alive, and she's going to do whatever it takes to do that. So it's interesting, like, watching it because it's like, you know, people that are parents or something like that. Like, what if your kid, for example, like, needed fresh blood to live? You know, what would you do to keep your kid alive? So it's just kind of like that whole entire, it's just that kind of dilemma, like sort of played out, except it's with older siblings instead of parents, but it's the same dynamic. Jessie, as I said, even though she is a little bit more pragmatic in the sense that she's like, look, we just have to keep him alive. We can't get like, you know, we can't get all sentimental about like killing these people. No one's gonna miss them, blah, blah, blah. But as I said, she just does that because that's what she tells herself. And she does like actually, even though she's very strict and she doesn't let Thomas go outside or anything like that, she does try to make things nice for him. Like I said, spend a lot of time homeschooling him. She made up all these games, like, you know, kind of musical stuff. You know, they play the organ together. And she has a thing where they celebrate Christmas once a month instead of just once a year, just so he doesn't get bored, you know what I mean? However, obviously, Thomas is a person too, and he's also starting to, I mean, the situation is really starting to wear on him as well, because obviously he's like, look, I can't stay in here in this house, like, just with you people. He wants to go outside, he wants to have friends his own age, you know, he wants to have something like a normal life, because he's like, look, I'm just stuck in this house all the time, I can't go anywhere, and so it's not even like a life at all. So that's kind of another place where this dilemma kind of takes place, because Jesse's like, well, we have to keep you safe, but he's like, but I'm not living, you know what I mean? So it's that, even though a lot of that is unspoken, that's clearly what the conflict is that's going on. So at some point, Thomas does try to contact, like, an outsider, like a neighbor kid and stuff like that, and, you know, that isn't the one thing that, like, sets off this series of events, but there is one particular thing, or actually it's not even one particular thing, but there is kind of like a breaking down of the routine, which leads from one event to another, which just makes this situation more and more untenable, like, as the movie goes on. As I said, I'm not going to spoil the ending because it's a fairly new movie and it hasn't been on the streaming services for all that long. But as I said, don't go into this expecting it is a vampire movie. But don't go into it expecting, like, you know, Blade or Dracula or, like, you know, anything like a classical, traditional vampire type of story. This is much more, like, using vampirism as sort of, like, a metaphorical thing to explore the sacrifices that family members make, the things that they have to do to, like, keep their loved ones alive, even if those things are really, really, in this case, really, really terrible and really, really evil. And, like, how far would you go if you had a loved one that that needed this, and would you end up doing what these siblings did for their brother? So as I said, if you like stuff like this, thematically, this is similar to Let the Right One In. It's like a totally different vibe to that movie. Like, don't think that it's similar, but thematically, it's kind of like explore some of the same themes as Let the Right One In. As I said, The Addiction, Martin, movies like that. If you like vampire movies that are more like that, then you'll probably dig this one as well. I actually quite liked it. It is quite slow. It is very bleak. It is very grim. But you guys know I kind of like that kind of thing. So if you like that kind of thing, then this is very easy to watch. I believe it's streaming for free on Tubi. It's also on Shudder as of this recording. And I'm pretty sure it's also on Amazon Prime as well. So if that sounds interesting at all to you, then please check it out. And if you've seen it, let me know what you thought about it in the comments. And that will do it for this installment of Flickers of Fear. And I will see you guys on the next one. Bye.